The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It is, and we've made it to a Friday. Yay! And today's show is going to be a little different than usual. I know there's so much stuff going on. We're all on edge. COVID is rearing its ugly head again. But we're going to take a little break, for the most part, from politics today. But before we get to the 40th anniversary of MTV, some of us remember when it launched, I do want to give you an update on the news, because after all, this is a news-based program, and I would be remiss if I didn't share with you what's going on. So there's some breaking news this afternoon. For instance, the Justice Department finally said that Donald Trump's tax returns must be shared with the House. After a long legal fight over the Democrats' demand to see these 8 years of Trump's tax returns, the Justice Department announced today that the returns should be provided. It wasn't immediately clear if Trump would be able to block the move in a court, although they already went through that. The Supreme Court said he had to turn over the tax returns, so what's the holdup? I guess we're getting closer. Guess being the operative word there. Speaking of the former guy, the House Oversight Committee today released notes that were taken by then acting Deputy Attorney General Donahue on December 27th, 2020. It was a phone call between Trump, who was still president at the time, and the former acting Attorney General Rosen. Do you remember this guy? And it reveals attempts by Trump unequivocally to pressure two of the most senior officials at the Justice Department to help overturn the 2020 elections or risk losing their jobs. So the acting Deputy Attorney General Donahue was taking notes. And we've seen screenshots of the actual handwritten notes with direct quotes. Here are some of the quotes. And again, this was Donahue was taking notes on this conversation between Trump and then acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen. Rosen, you know, when Trump was telling him, you got to do this, Rosen said, the Department of Justice, this is a quote, cannot and will not snap its fingers and change the outcome of the election. To which Trump responded, saying that he understood, but wanted the agency to, quote, just say the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressmen. And he continued, he said, we have an obligation to tell people that this was an illegal, corrupt election. Trump also suggested darkly that he might replace Rosen as acting attorney general and mentioned a possible replacement as a different senior Justice Department lawyers. He said, quote, people tell me Jeff Clark is great. I should put him in. People want me to replace DOJ leadership. Donahue, the guy who was taking the notes, replied that changing leadership would not change the department's position, according to the notes. And then, as Rosen and Donahue repeatedly told the president that specific claims of voter fraud he had heard were false, Trump said, quote, you guys may not be following the internet the way that I do. So I haven't done it in a while, so my voice is out of practice. He also said that people are angry and blaming DOJ for the inaction. Ugh. All right. In other news, why it came down to this, I don't know, but an 11th hour Hail Mary attempt by House Democrats to extend the federal eviction moratorium set to expire this weekend failed because they just don't have the votes. And frankly, even if they did, there was no plan to get it through the Senate anyway. So the really tragic thing about the situation is that $46.5 billion in rental aid was approved earlier this year. But only 6.5% of those funds had been distributed as of the end of June. What the hell are they waiting for? Because now it's too late. Now Nancy Pelosi says it's up to the CDC to extend the moratorium. But now the CDC is saying We don't know that we have the authority to do that anymore because the Supreme Court sort of swatted us down for the last time we did it. So who's going to be hurt? Millions of American renters who are going to be evicted, possibly as soon as this weekend. Meanwhile, Congress is itching to leave town for their August vacation, because of course they are. The House is scheduled to already be gone, and apparently some members are sitting around with their cars packed and like frantically trying to see what kind of a flight they could still get out tonight. Now, the Senate is supposed to be in session for one more week, and then they'll be out starting August 9th, I guess. But Politico is reporting that when Chuck Schumer announced earlier this month that he might keep the Senate in session into August, delaying the previously scheduled recess in order to help get these two infrastructure bills through. Kyrsten Sinema, here she comes again. Kyrsten Sinema told the majority leader that she was not sticking around to vote because she had prior vacation plans, don't you know? And she wasn't about to let the infrastructure or reconciliation bills get in the way. I got nothing more to say about Kyrsten Sinema. Somebody primary her and get her the fuck out of there. And by the way, it bears repeating that the Reverend Jesse Jackson and the Reverend Dr. William Barber and 37 others were arrested Monday at Kyrsten Sinema's Phoenix office during a protest calling on her to end the filibuster to pass voting rights legislation. And I can't believe they're leaving town for the month of August and we don't have an answer on voting rights legislation. Amazing. Amazing. All right. I'll probably regret this, but what the hell? Someone calling from the 802 area code. Who's this?
Hi, Nicole. My name is Timmy.
Yeah.
And I live in East Berkshire, Vermont.
Uh-huh.
And you had mentioned the 40th anniversary of MTV.
Right.
And I just wanted to let you know that... I'm a guitar player.
Yeah.
And I'm in a band. My bass player, her name is Julie, and my keyboard player, his name is Mark. But they both started at MTV from day one. Actually, they're gonna be chilling on some yacht there, I guess.
Who are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Well, you had mentioned you're gonna talk about MTV.
Yes, I am, but you're mentioning names that nobody knows. Are you talking about a band? Who are you talking about?
No, I don't know if it's appropriate for me to name last names. I mean, I can. I guess it's public domain, but the keyboards player's name is Mark Cusid and the bass player's name is Julie Davidson.
Okay.
And actually Julie wrote a song that Tom Jones recorded in the mid 80s. So anyway, we're in a band. And I just thought it was interesting.
Okay.
Just a little piece of trivia.
All right, cool. Well, maybe they'll enjoy hearing me talk with Mark Goodman because I got to run because we got Mark Goodman coming up. But Timmy, I thank you for the call. I thought you were going to be some.
Mark Goodman is going to be at the party as well.
So okay, cool.
I will let those guys know that you're on air right now.
Okay. All right. So Sounds good.
So if we get another 802 call, it may be either Mark.
Okay,
or Julie,
but I'm not taking more calls because I'm going to sign off now and I'm going to go talk to Mark Goodman. But Timmy, thank you for calling, and I hope you enjoy the interview, which we will begin, I think, right now. And instead of starting with Mark, let's start with what happened 40 years ago today. Not today. I'm sorry. 40 years ago Sunday. Do you remember this? Here we go. Uh-oh.
Seven.
There we go.
Six, five, four. We've gone for main engine start. We have main engine start.
rock and roll.
This is it. Welcome to MTV Music Television, the world's first 24-hour stereo video music channel. Now, just moments ago, all of the VJs and the crew here at MTV collectively hit our executive producer, Sue Steinberg, over the head with a bottle of champagne, and behold, a new concept is born. The best of TV combined with the best of radio. Now, starting right now, you'll never look at music the same way again. We'll be right back to introduce the other VJs and the other folks who are going to be with us on MTV.
Who is that young man? Hello, Mark Goodman.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi there. Well, that was a very young Mark Goodman, 40 years ago.
Oh, man.
This weekend, MTV launched.
Just out of high school.
Were you? So, first of all, welcome to the show. We've been talking about doing something for years, and it took this to get me to say, hey, come on the show. So I apologize for that. It's great to see you. It's so cool to look back on that because I remember that 40, I hate to admit it, I was in college at the time. But there you were, MTV. Now, that's not actually how it started. It started with the video, but wasn't there a mishap or something?
What wound up happening after the rocket launch and after John Lack said, ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll, the Buggles.
Video killed the radio star.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was okay. That did fine. Then it was Pat Benatar, You Better Run, which was the second video, but there was some sort of, there was a glitch and there was, I think it went black for like 10 or 15 seconds, then came back. And then was the first break, which was supposed to be that we just saw.
Right.
Me saying, hey, it's, you know, I'm going to be here and I'll be at this time and all of that. And let me introduce you to the other VJs. But instead, what we saw coming out of You Better Run was, and I'm Alan Hunter.
Speaking of Alan Hunter, here's for those watching a video stream, here's a picture of the original five VJs from MTV. Alan Hunter's in the front. That's you with the big hair in the back. Of course, J.J. Jackson, Martha Quinn, and Nina Blackwood. We came to know all of you guys, but you were virtual unknowns when MTV hit the air on August 1st, 1981, right? You came from PLJ.
Sort of. I quit PLJ to go to this new thing, MTV. JJ, I mean, I had been in radio for 6 years before MTV started. I was music director in Philadelphia at WMMR.
Wow.
But JJ had been in radio for more than 10. He was at BCN in Boston.
Right.
And had been working in LA for ABC television, doing entertainment reporting and stuff. So he was the man.
He was the elder statesman of the group.
Yeah.
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 But Martha and Nina and Alan, where did they come from?
Well, Martha was still living in the dorms at NYU.
Wow.
Literally. I mean, she was a senior, but it was the summer and she was still there.
Wow.
And she had been doing a radio show for NYU, like an hour or two a week, as this character, Tiffany. And she played disco music and stuff like that a little bit. So she was, in fact, the four of us got together to do some stuff for the big 80s on Sirius XM. And we were trying to remember who Alan and Martha were the last hired. And I think Martha was the very last. Alan, there was, you know, we needed more, and Alan went to Millsaps College in Mississippi. Bob Pittman is from Mississippi. There was this Mississippi meetup or something in Central Park. I don't know what under what umbrella it was or why, but they got introduced. Bob and Alan got introduced, and Bob said, come on in, and that was that. He got hired. Martha was hired after Meg Griffin quit.
Oh, really? Meg was part of it at first?
Meg got the job. Meg was the girl next door character.
Wow.
You know, we all had our little, in retrospect, we had our little personas.
Sure.
And Meg She was part-time at WNEW in New York, right. Legendary rock station in New York City, and had been there for a while. And she was part-time, but she was kind of next in line to go full-time and was a little dodgy about quitting that for this thing. Who knew what it was going to be? And she decided after she felt uncomfortable on camera. I remember her doing some interviews and stuff before we launched. And we had to do some retakes of things, take twos and threes. Sure. And she was just felt very uncomfortable with that. And I remember riding uptown with her in a cab and having a chat about it. And she was like, yeah, no, I don't think I'm going to do this.
Wow. You know, Meg Griffin is one of the reasons I got into radio, because when I was in college, I was in South Florida. I went to University of South Florida, but she was on NEW.
Right.
And my boyfriend at the time, that was his station. And he would have tapes sent down to Florida where we would listen. So it was, Meg Griffin was my, she was who I wanted to be when I grew up. Right. And I got to tell her that in person many years later, but I never knew this part of it. I never knew she was originally hired at MTV.
Yeah, she walked away from it. I mean, there was other stuff that she discovered about it that I didn't know until I started working at Sirius before it was at Sirius XM.
Right.
Meg was there before me.
Yes, right.
But we knew each other from back in the day, and she told me some stuff. Like she heard a conversation, I think, with Bob Pittman, where she was like in the hallway. He was in his office on the phone and made some sort of a comment about, I got my hot video vixen and I got my jock and I got, he had these caricatures of what he imagined that we would be. And, he got him. JJ was the benign black guy. And
who were you? You were the cool rock jock guy?
Okay.
The cute
one? I was
one?
The hunk.
You were the hunk. you were the
Alex. And Alan was the jock.
Uh huh.
Nina was the video vixen.
Right.
Martha was the girl next door.
Oh boy. And here is a before and after, I guess, of Mark Goodman. So there are.
That shot on the left there. Nice.
Yeah.
I know where that comes from.
Yeah.
ARP magazine, ladies and gentlemen. That's right.
It is. This is from AARP. How far we've come. So that's hysterical because they did
Hey, man, Bruce was on the cover.
Oh, of course. Hey, look, this is reality. This is what happens 40 years after MTV premieres. We who were kids then are old now, but that's why we can look back on 40 years now. So these days, Mark Goodman, you alluded to, you're at Sirius XM. The two have merged and you're doing, and we spoke before you ever launched this show. It's a talk show about music. So tell us what this is, what you're doing now.
It's exactly what you do with politics. We do that with music. Same thing. We tear it apart. We talk about it. We're passionate about it. We're our audience who have taken to calling themselves Volume Maniacs. The name of the channel is Volume.
Okay.
And they call themselves Volume Maniacs. And they have formed this amazing coalition. People all over the country. There's people in California and Tennessee and Maine. And they have, we'll see on our Twitter page while we're on the air and when we're off, they're all talking. Mm. They're having their own discussions. Sometimes it's about something that's going on the show.
Right. Sometimes not. I got you on that one. I have a YouTube chat room going during the show, and sometimes I glance over. It's, what the hell are they talking about? Yeah. So sometimes what we are on and sometimes something totally different.
Right. But it is, as much as I love being at MTV, and it's certainly probably the biggest thing I'll ever do. I there's other stuff. I'm tagged the 80s guy.
Right.
But I'm like a 60s guy, really. Or maybe a 70s guy.
But you're also a guy, the way we got to know each other was years later. Although I followed you in a number of places because in 85, I was in New York. And that's when I went to work at WPLJ, where you had left to go to MTV 4 years earlier. So was Larry Berger your boss too?
Yes, he was.
Larry Berger was my PD. And I worked with Jim Kerr. I produced the morning show, Jim Kerr and the Morning Crew.
You know what? I remember that now. That's right. I remember.
You were still at MTV, so we never met then. Mm-hmm. Then I moved out to LA. I was working with Mark and Brian at KLOS.
Yeah.
You were on this amazing station along with JJ that was The Edge at 101.9. Now, The Edge gets conveniently forgotten about because it was overshadowed by the station that I was there for the sign on of, which was, hold on, my alarm's going off, KSCA, which is at 101.9, which came a few years later. But I used to sit and listen to The Edge going, I want to work there. And we still had never met. And then years later, that station went off the air. It was replaced by K-Lite. And then we took over and brought in what was more a formal AAA adult album alternative format. But that's what you guys were doing at The Edge before we came along.
JJ was the boss.
Was he?
JJ was the PD.
Hmm.
That was also an amazing, fun time to get back into radio and to do that kind of radio. You know, JJ was coming from where he had come from, you know, in radio. He understood what it was to be on the air, and he understood what it was to want to let the air staff have a say in the music. But JJ himself had great ears. But Jim Ladd
was
on the
right.
station.
Yep.
Full time Cynthia Fox was on the station. John Logic,
right? John Logic, yes, right.
Just great, great. It was so. I didn't Ladd. I knew, of course, because of JJ. But I sort of peripherally knew Cynthia and John Logic. These people are phenomenal, phenomenal radio people. It was so amazing to work with them. And a freeform station on regular radio.
Right. That's why I was so enamored of it because, you know, I worked with Mark and Brian and was doing the big morning show thing. But that was my adventurous music radio that didn't really exist. Then was Bill Ward your general manager then, too?
He was.
Because he's the one who brought us back as KSCA, which it was a whole new format, but it was basically picked up where The Edge left off. Why did you guys go away in the first place? Do you know?
It was Gene Autry's station.
It was Gene Autry's station.
Owned by Gene Autry.
Yes, it was.
And
Jackie. Can't forget Jackie,
yes,
his wife.
Of course. You know, it's radio.
Yep.
And frankly, we had like a one share when we got the word that they were going to shut us down. They shut it down, and then the next book came out, and we went to a two, which I probably would have saved us. But it was simply numbers and advertising.
Right.
And sorry, see ya.
Yeah, and it was too bad because I was heartbroken. Then, so a few years go by, and I get wind of the fact that this format had grown up called Adult Album Alternative or AAA, whatever you want to call.
Right.
And I found out that this consultant named Dennis Constantine, who was based in Boulder, Colorado, who worked with KBCO, was in talks to launch a station in LA. And long story short, I flew out to Boulder. I said, I want to meet with you. And I wound up being part of the sign-on crew at KSCA and there for the entire 2.5 year life that the station had, which has become more legendary than that. But I always remember you guys because you at The Edge, you started it as far as I was concerned.
It was, it was a moment. And we made, I think we made a year.
Wow.
I think. I know we didn't do any more than that.
Right. And then we didn't meet until a few years later when a mutual friend of ours, Michelle Clark, did an event called Sunset Sessions where she would fly in adventurous radio people, usually from our format, from this AAA format, and musicians and label people and bring us to some exotic location where we would watch and listen to music and mingle. And so it was at Sunset Sessions, so sort of like summer camp in February, where that's where we became friendly. That's where we met year after year.
True. I remember it well.
As do
that
I.
Man.
Good times.
I got sent, the offer to come because I was doing music supervision at the time. And Michelle came up with the idea of, hey, here's another great outlet. People were starting to realize, television, let's get our bands on TV.
Right. Because and music supervision, for those who don't know, you basically put the music in TV shows, in movies and commercials. And so that was the other element she brought into Sunset Sessions were music supervisors. That's, you know, that was going to be my next route, but I wound up leaving LA. It's hard to break into that. So
you're probably better off.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I don't know. Well, who's better off now? Radio, unfortunately, like MTV, sort of doesn't exist. You know, MTV started, and I just was reading some comments on one of the things I was looking at, knowing I was going to talk to you about this. And, stop. And the, somebody wrote, I heard that the M in MTV actually stood for music.
Oh, God. That's awful.
It is horrible, right?
Yeah, kind of heartbreaking that they, but right, that they actually went about removing the word from the logo. They're not music television anymore.
No. Now, is MTV even still on the air? I feel bad. I'm an old lady now.
Come on. It's on the air.
Is it on the air? But I don't. Honestly, I don't. I mean, I didn't. I would have heard if it went off the air, but I haven't watched it in years. It did. The music did disappear from it. It became, you know, the real life reality shows and other stuff. I think the last actual MTV musical thing I went to was a taping of Bruce Springsteen that was supposed to be unplugged. And then he did one song and he
there.
Plugged. I was there, too.
There.
My one and only picture with Bruce was taken after that taping.
That was great, except kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it was. And it was also, it was the Human Touch and Lucky Town band.
Yeah,
so it wasn't
band.
The E Street band.
Yeah.
So it was.
I mean, not a crap band. They were great, but
right.
just not the
not
E Street band.
Not the E Street band. Exactly.
Yeah. I want to slag off these guys because they were great. It was that sort of, you know, Human Touch and Lucky Town thing was. I don't know.
It was good music. It just wasn't. It wasn't Bruce and the E Street Band.
Yeah. Yeah.
But seeing him in that venue, we were lucky. Industry people got to go to this taping, and we thought it was unplugged. And then he plugged in. It was just a concert for these two new albums. So it was disappointing. But it's Bruce. So how can it be disappointing? Right.
I feel that way.
Yeah. So Mark Goodman, you after MTV. You did music supervision. What happened what happened with MTV? How long were you there?
Alan Hunter and I quit on the same day in like, I think March or April or something. And I left in mid July of 87.
Wow.
But they wanted me to stay. So we did another year deal where I moved to LA, and we did a deal for another year where I would come back once a month and do a week's worth of shows. In studio. And then that was 87 to 88. And then 88 to 89, I was kind of their field reporter out there. And I wasn't on the air all that much. I would do some interviews here and there. I would host press conferences for them to announce the VMAs or whatever might be coming up. So I was there in some form into early 89. But officially, like in terms of every day being on the air, I left in 87.
Well, that's funny because, you know, I left New York and moved to LA in 87 as well. And it was so many years later that we met. But I guess we sort of lived parallel lives. Again, knowing a lot of the same people, working at the same places, but not at the same time. And we've never worked together. And then when you found out that I think when I went to Air America, you said, I want to talk politics. And then you told me you were going to do this show talking about music. And I said, I want to talk about music. So we should trade one day.
Just, right. Yeah. You know, it's on the channel. Look, music and politics are interrelated.
I agree.
As you well know, If you're on the music side in radio, if you're on the air and on the music side, generally the rule is
you don't go there.
Shut up and play the music.
That's right.
No politics. Don't get into any.
Don't
of that
go
stuff
there because you're going to offend. Right. You're going to offend probably half of your audience.
Yeah. On volume yesterday, we got a call from this woman who she lets fly that she was a first time caller. So that's a big thing for us. We have this fanfare that we do for them and everything. And so we do that. And she asks her question. And then I said, so how did you find us? How long have you been listening? She said, first time caller, first time listener.
Wow.
And we were like, oh, well, how did you find us? I was just scrolling through the channels. And I was listening to Sean Hannity.
Ooh.
And, you know, I just sort of flipped over from there.
Wow.
I went, Oh, welcome.
Uh-huh.
Good to have you.
Uh-huh. So do you like that Aaron? I don't know the guy's name. The country guy with the really offensive song that's number one?
Oh, Aaron Lewis.
Aaron Lewis. Yeah. Oh, my
that
God.
Is, I posted about that the other day. It's really offensive.
Yeah.
Really offensive. It's a problem for me because it's country music is trying to have its reckoning.
Yeah.
It's trying. There's more black artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lil Nas X coming out as gay and doing the stuff that he has done. And I mean, they're trying. Like, even the way that they treat women.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible. And it's just evidence of, I don't think they're ready for their reckoning yet because it's a smash song. It's huge.
Is it? Huge. And I haven't even heard it. I just heard about it. Again,
it's a good song. Until
country
you hear
is
them
not-
going, oh, another statue torn down in another town. And, you know.
Oh, God. So do you play music on the show or do you just talk about it?
We play a little bit.
Okay.
We what we're allowed to do because of the fees involved
mm-hmm.
is we do, for example, every day at the top of the show, and I co-host with Alan Light, who you may know. He's a journalist and author. He was the editor at Spin and Rolling Stone.
I know his name.
He's
I don't
tons of books.
Okay.
He's written books on Prince. He did Greg Allman's memoir just before he passed.
Wow. Okay.
So he's great, and we each do a song of the day at the top of the show. 30 seconds.
Oh,
that's what we're allowed to play.
Really? Yeah, we think it would be under the umbrella of Sirius XM and you could get away with it, but no. Huh?
Not the talk channels.
Wow.
All of the music channels, no problem. And all of the music channels, you know, we play full songs. On
sure.
the talk channels, the way that they have it, you know, scheduled at this point anyway, is 30 seconds. But we have some, now we're 4 or 5 years in. So we have some a bit more leeway now so that on Fridays when we do new music, for example, Alan and I both do a battle song. We play the full songs.
Of but something new do, that you're they're bringing to the table to introduce?
They're loosening it up a little okay. bit. And if there's like, you know, someone drops a new song and it's a big thing, like if Iron Maiden the other last week dropped a new song, we have a lot of Iron Maiden fans.
Really?
We played the whole song.
Okay.
You know. So we can do that every so often.
So you're also, you're not format specific. It's just music. Because I couldn't see me playing an Iron Maiden song, but, you know, that's me.
Look, I think one of the things with what you do is it must help you to sharpen up and get and expand your knowledge base about what's happening in the world
around course.
You.
Right.
So the same thing really is happening here. I mean, I wasn't, for example, a big country fan. Oh,
right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here and there. I'm, you know, Graham Parsons, I'm in.
Sure.
That kind
right.
of thing.
John Prine, you're there.
John Prine, 1,000%.
Of course. But
Alan, interestingly enough, my co-host now and for the last 10 or 15 years, I think, has been a big country fan and has been
wow.
working a lot in country. So he is really, he champions a lot of up and coming artists. And I've learned so much about country music. It's been great. And before that, like when he was at Rolling Stone and things, he was heavy, heavy into hip hop.
Wow.
What
a range.
Major.
Yeah.
He was the guy who was at Rolling Stone, was fighting to get Ice-T on the cover, was all about Dre and all of that stuff. Rolling Stone was very, you know, lukewarm
mm-hmm.
on hip hop, but he was always championing it. So I've learned more about hip hop too. So it's great. But we are not specifically anything. The only thing I refuse to play is opera. I just,
yeah. You know, it's so funny you say that because, you know, Facebook, we're in a whole different world these days. And so I have a sister who lives about 20 minutes from me, but I don't ever see her, of course. But she is now in Nashville with her boyfriend on vacation. And she goes there every summer because she's a friend who lives on the mountain and has horses and all that. So she posted a memory. They have these memories on Facebook from a few years ago when she went to see Ted Nugent at the Ryman Auditorium. And she took her daughter with her. And I sort of blasted her. It's like, why would you give that cretin money? I said, I would sooner pay money to listen to Paint Dry or opera than give him money.
Yeah.
So it's funny that because opera.
That's true. I would agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I would be right there.
How
with
could you.
You
do? So I'm like, are you sure you're my sister? So, and, yeah. you know, but so politics and music do there is a convergence there. So my fantasy job is to be able to do basically what I do, a talk show, talk about things that are happening that tend to encompass the news and politics, because that's life, and play music. Because, you know, I mean, I'm sure you're the same way, because you've been immersed in music your whole life. I always think musically, and there's always a great song that, like, after a rant about something, like, this would be the perfect song to play, except I get copyright violated if I do that. YouTube suspends me from streaming. You know, it's mostly YouTube that I get screwed around with. But now they're all getting bad because there's been no update to the internet, to the rules, to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, to the rules that were put in place 20 or more years ago, 30 years ago now, that are antiquated, that don't work anymore, but those are the rules that govern us now. So I can't play music on this show. I get copyright violated.
DMCA is idiotic.
Horrible.
It is idiotic. The rules surrounding, the rules out of the DMCA are things like you can't play, and I don't know exactly, it's like you can't play three songs from the same album within an hour.
I know.
You can't play the same artist, you know. I mean, there's all these restrictions that no one would give a damn about.
Right.
The artist?
No, they're like, play my stuff.
An hour? Go ahead. The label? Absolutely. You want to do an hour of our artist? Go ahead.
Right.
Nobody.
But the law says you can't do it.
The law says no. It's the stupidest thing. And it's true. There's so much that is antiquated, but it gets dodgy the more that you start to dig into.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how do you figure out what we do now with this stupid internet?
Well, the internet, I mean, it's like you think, look what it's become. And back when MTV went on the air, that was like the beginning of cable television. This was long before the internet. This was, cable was a new thing. And I remember, you know, I remember the promo, the planting the flag on the moon. Yeah. And I just thought that was such brilliant imagery. I mean, I still think that is classic. They couldn't have come up with a better logo.
It wasn't genius. It was really financial, because all of that footage is free. So we had like a 20 past the hour. Every hour was what we called the local avail, so that the local cable operators could sell advertising time in that spot and make money.
Right.
Well, we were like 2 and 3 years in. And we're getting mail from people about how they love that spacey video that you guys show sometimes, you know, with the run.
Because it would run during the local avails.
It was a time filler.
Right.
People were like, wow, we love that video.
Oh, how funny. That's funny. And here we are again. I honestly don't know what MTV is doing now, or VH1. So VH1 grew out of MTV a few years later, I think ostensibly for the people who are a little older, for more AC, as MTV got more rock oriented.
The honest truth is that it was strictly about the CNN had launched another music channel, a 24-hour video music channel. Their big thing was it was out of LA instead of New York. Uh-huh. Their big thing was, at the moment, we're live, but you never saw anyone.
Right.
So they would have like a locked off shot of the Santa Monica Mountains, and you would hear this disembodied voice, like it was radio, talking about what was coming up with videos, and then they'd go into videos. So we launched VH1. And basically what the sales department told all of the cable operators is, you can either pick this channel up or you'll lose MTV.
Oh,
meaning, and they're not going to pick up that channel, that live video music channel, and VH1. So we literally just strong-armed them. We mafia'd them out of the business. They lasted about a month.
Wow. Because I don't even recall that. I don't even remember CNN having a music channel. You know, they're getting ready to start a 24-hour streaming channel now, like CNN Plus or something. So that's where everything is going now. You know, cable, I guess, is still there, but people are cutting the cord and everything is online now. And all the networks now have their streaming channel. And but again, we're still living under these sort of antiquated rules governing copyright, governing digital transmission of music over the internet. So something's got to be done there. But, you know, I spent last week mostly talking about that because Biden put out this executive order a couple of weeks ago, Friday, on copyright, on monopolies, on but he did not deal with you know, those internet issues, the DMCA and things like that. DCMA. Well,
as you know, the DMCA, Digital Millennium, Copyright
Act.
The, you know, radio, terrestrial radio has some stuff to deal with.
Well, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 is what destroyed our industry of radio.
Well, it divested, and no requirements for public service and ownership
rules, which were just expanded even more by a unanimous Supreme Court, who said, you know,
what a surprise.
There was a challenge to the rule that said one company could own, you know, 7 AM, 7 FM stations and a TV station in the same market. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, that's fine. They can even own more. They can own 2 TV stations and a newspaper, too.
So much for competing ideas.
Right. And that used to be the whole thing. That's why you wanted media non-consolidation. You wanted a wide variety of voices, diversity. And they just wiped that out, including Sotomayor and Kagan and Breyer, the three allegedly liberal justices on the court. They went unanimous. And that's when I just threw up my hands and said, well, radio, the industry that I got into in college in 1979 is no longer. I mean, there's something that plays over the public airwaves, but it's for the most part, with the exception of a few stations where people that we know work at, it's all like prepackaged, centrally programmed, generic radio for the masses. It's just, there's no in-station creativity anymore, except, you know, like I said, WXPN in Philly.
Public radio.
The public radio.
I think Bill Ward is at XPN. You mentioned Bill Ward.
No. Bill Ward died years ago.
We did?
Bill Ward died a few years after KSCA went off the air.
Oh, my gosh. Because somebody just wrote to me about XPN, and they wanted me to talk to the GM there. I thought it was him.
No, Bruce Warren. That's Bruce Warren.
Bruce Warren. Oh, I know him, too.
Yeah. Bruce Warren has been there. He was there forever. In fact, our original program director at KSCA was Mike Morrison, who was the PD at XPN. Bruce Warren was the music director. And Bruce Warren stepped. And look, we launched KSCA in 94. So Bruce Warren's still there. I believe now he's the GM. He runs the whole place. And that's an amazing station that they've expanded into a few side streaming channels. And they've turned it into an empire. It's one of the few great over-the-air radio stations that still exists because it's not owned and controlled by a corporation. But, for instance, there was a company called Entercom, which was one of the big broadcasting companies that not too long ago changed their name to Audacy, A-U-D-A-C-Y. So they're trying to be creative there. And what they just did was they realigned all their, I think this time it was the top 40 stations. Basically, they did away with the local jocks, and now they're hub-centered, so they're programmed centrally around the country. This is what you know, individual radio stations are now. They're no longer individual. So what's happening on satellite radio is, I mean, it makes more sense, because if you're going to have the same crap playing in every city, why do you need a station in every city? You can just have repeaters or a satellite signal coming down.
Yeah. I, without, you know, sounding like I'm shilling for my company, I don't understand how you can get a subscription to SiriusXM and ever drop it, because it's so much better. Whatever problems we have, it's 1,000 times better than what is happening on terrestrial radio.
It's true.
Any whatever format it is that you're talking about, music or talk, it's 1,000 times better.
I agree. Although I got to tell you, what's happened, this is my opinion, me speaking, that the progressive talk programming over there has gone way downhill. It's just not what it was at the beginning. So much so that I don't listen to that channel anymore. But, you know, there's a million streaming shows. But I do listen to music on SiriusXM. I listen to the Springsteen channel. I listen to Spectrum, where you used to be.
I was there for a long time. I missed gave that up to go to Volume.
To this one, right. Yeah. The Loft, which they took off the air, unfortunately, because that was Mike Moran. Barone and Meg Griffin. Yeah. Meg, again, my radio idol. And, you know, Meg hired me at Sirius before it was Sirius XM. And I so wanted to be on like a Spectrum-like channel. Spectrum, I think, was on XM before the merge.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she was at Sirius, and she was programming what was then called the Alt Country Channel. Now, I'm not a country music fan, but I was in the 90s. I became huge on Whiskey Town and Ryan Adams and right. Wilco and old 97s. And there were just a bunch of bands in that genre that I loved. But Meg was the expert, and there were so many more Slade Cleaves and artists that I didn't even know of. And she hired me to voice track mornings. And I had just moved back to Florida after a failed experiment in Taos, New Mexico, where I learned you can't go New York, L.A., Taos. It just doesn't
keep that in mind.
Didn't work for me, especially with a brand new adopted baby. So, yes. You know, it was like, oh, my God, what did I do? And I wound up moving back here. And then Meg hired me to voice track mornings on Sirius. Problem was, it was the Alt Country Channel, and if it was Wilco and Old 97s and Whiskey Town, I would have been fine. But it was a lot of these artists that I had no clue about. And I had a six-hour shift that I was voice tracking, and this one, voice tracking was still very unnatural. That's when you take a music log and you just say, oh, here's where the break is, and you back announce these songs without ever hearing the songs. So it's just an unnatural thing for an old school radio person. And I just wasn't good at it. I just really wasn't good at it. And she had to fire me. I mean, she had to. She didn't. She had somebody else do it. But, you know, it didn't last all that long. I was the wrong fit for that channel. But I never got back in. And I so wanted to be on the Spectrum or on the Loft, which would have been perfect fits for me, but it never happened.
Yeah. It's still there, the Spectrum.
I know.
It's quite different now. It's AAA, officially, I don't think really exists anymore, does
it? Yeah, again, that's the format that we did in the 90s that it was so special. And I don't know that the format doesn't exist. I mean, there are still stations in the format, but the music is different now. I mean, I look back and listen to some of the music from the 90s, and there was just, I guess I live in the 90s. There was some amazing music.
I love the 90s.
Me too.
But I mean, I liked all that, you know, I liked Blink, and you know,
right.
I liked all of those. The only
Sublime.
Thing I could not stand, and by the way, I'll just mention this. The only thing I hated was rap rock. I could not. And that angry white
like
guy.
Kid Rock and that kind
Kid
of
Rock
stuff.
And all of that crap.
Yeah, no, me either.
I couldn't stand it. And by the way, a little later on today, I'm going to be talking to the director of this new documentary. Maybe you've heard about it. It's coming out on Friday, Woodstock 99.
No.
And man, this will be out. I think it's on Netflix, but don't quote me about that. It's coming out on Friday. I know that. Woodstock 99. It's a 2-hour film breaking down what happened there. And that was the pinnacle of white guy rage.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And this documentary, I recommend it. It's the era of music documentaries, by the way. I'm sure you noticed.
Oh, my
so
God.
So good.
Have you seen this new McCartney one that's on?
3-2-1.
Oh, 3-2-1.
I've seen the whole thing. I have a screener. I've seen the whole thing. I know the first one just dropped.
Right. No, I saw it. They're all four or six hours are there.
They all out?
They're all
are
there.
They all out?
They're up on, HBO Max, I think, or is it Apple TV? Okay. And they're all there. But I understand it was culled down to, I think, 4 hours out of 15 that they started with. And music
geeks. That one is 6 hours.
Oh, 6 hours. Okay, then that's, yes.
But they're manageable. They're not hours. They're actually, I think they're like,
right, they're like a half hour each.
Minutes
right,
or something.
Right. Yeah, it goes quickly.
It's great.
There's also this 1971 series on.
Amazing.
Oh, my God. And that was 50 years ago. And everything. There was so much great music 50 years ago this year. It's
1971,
and that's on Apple TV.
The music changed everything.
Yes, and it did. That's a great series.
It's stunning. By comparison, since we're talking about docs, This Is Pop. Have you watched that one?
I have not, mostly because the songs they chose and the bands I have no interest in.
Oh, man.
It's like Backstreet Boys and...
They
like,
start episode one.
Yeah, it's like, just, no. And no, so we looked through
wrong.
The episodes to see if there were any that we were interested in, and there weren't.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's worth just dropping in for a minute. But it's not compared to the things that are coming out, you know, like these things we've mentioned and the Tina documentary. And, you know, I mean, there's such.
Yeah, there's such a lot of good stuff. There's really, a lot really of good stuff. So your show, Mark Goodman, I know we're just rambling, but it's so good to catch up with you and talk like this. And I'm going to extend an invitation. You pick a day. Basically, Monday, Wednesday, or Friday are the best days for me because I have standing guests on Tuesday and Thursday to come on my show and talk politics, but you're on the air the same time I am.
Yeah. That doesn't work.
That's the problem. Well, you know what? Maybe we'll tape something one day, like we're taping this in advance because I wanted you on in advance of the, 40th anniversary of MTV, but we had to tape it at an earlier time because you're live 4 to 7. You do a 3-hour show every day.
Yeah, on talk radio, man. Seconds. Remember 30 seconds of music?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there ain't that much of it when we're doing talk.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I've never been stressed out by radio. You know, I always love just doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
This is stressful.
I'll bet.
There's a lot of stuff to keep up on. And, it's all stuff that I would have been doing anyway. I would have been watching these docs. I would have been reading these books. I'm listening to the music, but... You know, it's a little bit more strenuous. But yeah, 3 hours live Monday through Friday.
And it's on the channel volume. What number is that?
It's 106.
106.
106. And I should mention, we're next week on volume, the four remaining VJs, we're going to get together and do a town hall.
Oh, wow.
It's a series that we do with on town halls on all different channels, depending on what the artist is. So this one is going to air on volume. On Sunday, August 1st.
Okay. Oh, cool. On the anniversary. So, that makes perfect sense.
It'll air on the anniversary. And the 80s, the other channel that I work on is also, again, the four of us got together and recreated the first 2 hours of MTV.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of, it's actually better than the first 2 hours because we have... Well, the Buggles kicked off MTV.
Sure,
everybody knows that. So I spoke with Jeff Downs. He's going to join us. We played a ton of REO Speedwagon.
Oh, God.
Kevin Cronin's going to join us.
Kevin Cronin's a good guy, but the music, I just think.
I love. No, you know what? It's back then. It's okay.
I didn't even like it then.
I hear from, High Infidelity was where I bailed on REO. I'm like, it's a great record. What are you going to say? We have Jeff Downs. We have Kevin Cronin. Uh-huh. We have Robin Lane.
Robin Lane.
Robin Lane and the Chartbusters.
Oh, wow.
Any memory?
Vaguely.
The big one. It was the first 6 months of MTV. We were scrambling for videos.
Right.
She's out of Boston. They're out of Boston. Really cool band. When Things Go Wrong was their big song. So Robin Lane we have on. Because she was played in the first 2 hours.
Wow.
So we found her. There's a couple of surprise guests too. They surprised us by having some people pop up on the recreation.
Now, Sirius XM is it's radio. I mean, it is audio only. Yeah. Is there any video component over there?
We do sometimes. When we do Zoom calls, we do record those and all the channels. Sometimes if the star is worth it and is cool with it.
Right.
Then we do record it and that's available through the website. There's a lot of video interviews, live performances, stuff like that, that is available on demand. We have a massive, on demand commitment. And now since we've taken over Pandora, me and Nina and Alan are doing a podcast. We've been doing a podcast for quite a while. So, they're trying to move beyond radio only. It's tough to figure out exactly where to go, but Pandora is a streaming service, but it's not like Spotify or Apple Music. It's a bit different. And so they're trying to sort of figure out how to modify that. They're really trying. I got to say, they're really trying to move beyond just radio. And I've been there 17 years, and as you say, Meg was there before me. I think it's been around for like 19 or almost maybe 20 years. It was CD1 when it started.
Wow.
And back when I joined in 2004. It was It was had just started to be called Sirius, and it was a the new technology.
Yes,
in town,
right?
So it was like, wow, you know, satellite radio, and it was a big thing. Not so much anymore.
No, and in fact, I'll tell you. I mean, when it launched, and they both, Sirius and XM, both launched right around the same time, and at the time,
Sirius was up a year
before
or before. I'm trying to remember now. I think it was before.
Might have been before.
I think it was before. Different rockets.
Uh huh.
Completely different ideas.
Yeah.
Lee Abrams.
Was it XM?
Founded XM. I've always said
he was the guy who ruined commercial FM radio.
Exactly.
He put out the Superstars format, which those of us old people will remember. That was when FM radio went from like freeform cool
and the Stones
to form
to four acts, nothing else.
Right, right. And the formatted thing. I remember a station I worked at, WRCN. On Long Island, Riverhead. In the summertime, I was talking to the Hamptons. And we had a sheet with categories and a card file. And you'd do the A song, and there were like five songs in the A, which came up every hour. And then the B and the C. And then there was like the F category that I'd go digging and digging and digging to try to find. Yeah. Oh, okay, I'll play that one. And then you write on the back when it last played. But it was very formatic. That was what Lee Abrams did to FM radio.
So I've always said this, XM, it was amazing. The channels that they came up with and was, you basically played on all the channels, whatever.
Right.
That fit into that little zone that they had created. And I've always believed that this was Lee Abrams' penance for ruining radio.
Right.
He came up with something that was honestly far cooler than Sirius.
At the beginning,
because
yes,
it had this great love of music and of artists.
Yep.
Sirius was, you know, was commercial, I mean, comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
But we had, you know, Hits One, which was a top 40 radio station.
Right, right.
We had a bunch of that. We had, you know,
you had
hip-hop stations.
We had alt country.
We have three country stations.
But alt country was where I did mornings. But yeah.
So it's Roadhouse Radio.
Right. Right,
the highway,
the outlaw. Is it outlaw?
Outlaw. Right. I guess is probably what you
right.
might
that
have been
was
on.
Was alt country, but it used to just be called alt country. But back then, when they both first made a splash, I was at Channel 103.1 in Los Angeles. That then became I forget what they called it, but we were Channel 103.1. It was the Clear Channel's attempt at bringing AAA back to LA after KSEA. Anyway, I bought stock in both Sirius and XM because I thought this is the future. This is going to be, they're going to save my industry. And I remember I paid like $40 a share. And I don't know how much money, I didn't put a lot of money into it because I didn't have a lot of money, but I had, a decent amount of stock in both companies and watched them both go down to like $2 a piece.
XM, I think, was up like around 20 or something like that a share for a while.
I got in at 40.
I don't think we've ever been over $10 at Sirius. We're
at the very beginning, at the very, very beginning when they first went public, because that's when I got in, and I'm telling you, it was like $40 a share, and then it just went. That's when I learned you don't invest with your heart, you know. Because I thought this is the future of radio. Anyway, Mark Goodman, this is so good to just catch up with you, and it's nice to do it. Be nicer sitting on a beach in some exotic location, listening to the Jayhawks playing on the stage right over there. But
let's give Michelle a call.
We can.
Let's wake her up.
She's awake.
On.
I'm telling you, she's awake. If you're serious, we can.
No.
I still talk to her, and she still is. There's this Sunset Sessions website, sunsetsessions.org, that has videos and performances and interviews and pictures, lots of pictures. And she still talks about putting together another one. A few years ago, before COVID hit, she was talking about South Africa. But of course, everything changes. And everything has changed. Anyway, Mark Goodman, it is so good to catch up with you 40 years after MTV. We keep going. You just tick on and you move on. And your daughter now she is a musician. She's an artist. Uh-oh.
You know about Freddie?
Of course. I met her at a Sunset Sessions 1 year.
Oh my God.
I think in San Diego when Rick Springfield was there. Yeah. And then a couple of years later, I think I saw a video that you sent out that she did that was wonderful. So what's
Michelle
happening?
Michelle was nice enough to kind of give her a leg up and got her to do, it was like in a small, like in a hotel suite or something.
Right.
That was really her first performance, real performance. She's way, way, way beyond that and has been playing around. Well, actually, she just did her first gig post-pandemic a couple of weeks ago. And she's been dropping songs as Freddie, all caps, F-R-E-D-D-Y.
F-R-E-D-D-Y. So that's who we look for, Freddie. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And that is Mark Goodman's daughter. Check her out. Oh, how cool. All right, Mark, it's so great to connect with you. I could keep going, but we've gone on so long, and I know you have a show to do, and so do I, actually. Yeah. Great to talk to you. Congratulations.
Thank you so
on planting that flag 40 years ago, and so cool to talk to you all these years later as we're old farts, and, you know, you're on the cover of the AARP magazine.
I really appreciate you having me on, Nicole.
And
I will take you up on that little political, let's talk politics.
Anytime. We can tape it. We'll set up one day at noon or something, and we'll just Zoom, and we'll record it as if it's a whole live show, and I'll just air it later in the afternoon.
I'm in.
All right. Sounds good. So great
to
see
you, Nicole.
Thank you, Mark. Take care.
Take care.
MTV 40 years later. Mark Goodman, everyone. All right. That was a great blast from the past. And yes, we did have to tape it in advance because Mark is on the air now. So you can switch over to channel 106 if you have Sirius XM and catch the last hour of his show. All right. We're done. We're done for the week. We got a big show for you. Monday, the guy who made that video about the reasons he got vaccinated is going to join us Monday. Right. Oh, shit. Monday, I also have, I got to check back with him. I forgot I have Julie K. Brown on Monday. I forgot to put her in my book. Yeah. All right. So I got my work cut out for me. I'll have to reschedule him maybe earlier in the day. We'll tape something. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll see you Monday. I will leave you with the news because there was news. So let's do this and have a great weekend and happy 40th anniversary, MTV. Bye.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
This time, it really quite possibly is Infrastructure Week. The Senate on Wednesday voted 67-32 to open debate on the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill, the one that was hammered out in negotiations between a group of centrist Republicans and Democrats and the White House. The plan calls for big investments in our public works system, including about $550 billion in new money for roads, bridges, rail, transit, water, and other physical infrastructure. More specifically, it allocates $73 billion to rebuild the electric grid, $66 billion for passenger and freight rail, $65 billion to expand broadband internet access, $55 billion for water infrastructure, $40 billion to fix bridges, $39 billion to modernize public transit, and $7.5 billion to create the first federal network of charging stations for electric vehicles. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and 16 other Republicans voted to advance this compromise legislation. President Biden called the deal, quote, the most significant long-term investment in our infrastructure and competitiveness in nearly a century, adding that neither side got everything they wanted, but that's what it means to compromise and forge consensus, the heart of democracy, end quote. Be reminded, though, this vote was only to open debate. We've still got a long way to go. And in case you are wondering who the 17 Republicans were who voted with the Democrats, along with Mitch McConnell, it's Roy Blunt of Missouri, Richard Burr of North Carolina, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Susan Collins of Maine, Kevin Kramer of North Dakota, Mike Crapo of Idaho, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, John Hoven of North Dakota, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Rob Portman
Iowa,
of Ohio,
John Hoven of
Jim
North
Rich
Dakota,
of Idaho,
Lisa
Murkowski, Mitt Romney of Utah, Tom Tillis of North Carolina, and Todd Young of Indiana. So far, so good, right? Well, that's only part of the deal. As you know, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has been pursuing a two-pronged approach while the bipartisan group of senators hammered out this deal, which was done in principle yesterday. The other part is where the Democrats are pursuing a go-it-alone approach on a $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, meaning it will pass with just 51 votes. No Republicans are necessary. All along, Democrats were clear that one would not pass without the other. And Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said she will not bring any bills on infrastructure to the floor until the Senate passes both a bipartisan bill and the larger one through budget reconciliation. So enter Kyrsten Sinema, who just had to rain on the parade by announcing her opposition to the other part of the equation. Seriously, the hopefully soon to be unemployed senator from Arizona released a statement that read, quote, "After reviewing the Senate Budget Committee's outline, I have told Senate leadership and President Biden that I support many of the goals in this proposal to continue creating jobs, growing American competitiveness, and expanding economic opportunities for Arizonans. I have also made clear that while I will support beginning this process, I do not support a bill that costs $3.5 trillion. And in the coming months, I will work in good faith to develop this legislation with my colleagues and the administration to strengthen Arizona's economy and help Arizona's everyday families get ahead." Huh? Sinema did not specify a price tag she'd find acceptable. Shortly after she released this statement, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez fired back with a tweet that read, "Good luck tanking your own party's investment in childcare, climate action, and infrastructure while presuming you'll survive a three-vote House margin, especially after choosing to exclude members of color from negotiations and calling that a, quote, bipartisan accomplishment." Oh, boy. To be continued. The other big news of the day concerns our current surge of COVID-19 infections and new guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention urging people to once again wear masks indoors, which prompted some new mask mandates in cities, states, schools, and businesses. And the attending physician in the House of Representatives announced that the chamber would reinstate its mask mandate as this virulent Delta variant of the coronavirus drives the largest surge of infections. So you know what happens next, right? House Republicans responded with fighting and yelling and Congressman Chip Roy of Texas trying and failing to get the House to adjourn for the day on Wednesday because he didn't want to wear a mask. Asked to respond to Kevin McCarthy's rejection of the reimposed mask mandate, Speaker Nancy Pelosi didn't hold back. She told reporters, quote, "He is such a moron." Gotta agree with that one. An 8.2 magnitude earthquake struck off the coast of Alaska late Wednesday, triggering a tsunami warning that was lifted about 2 hours later. And despite the resurgence of new COVID infections, the four-day Lollapalooza Festival kicks off in Chicago on Thursday. They are requiring proof of vaccination or clean COVID tests and masks for those unvaccinated. But I can't help but think this is not going to end well. And finally, the U.S. economy grew at a robust 6.5% rate April through June, and weekly jobless claims dropped by 24,000 to 40,000. These reports are another sign that the job market and economy continues to recover rapidly from the coronavirus recession. Now, if we could only convince everyone to get vaccinated, we'd be past this mess. Just saying. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. And please click on that donate button.